conversations. We want to try to maintain that informality. So I do want you to please write down some questions. But let me tell you who's in front of you. I mean, these are three really powerful, really talented marketing executives who all market to C-level executives. Our program today is marketing to C-level, and we have three very experienced perspectives. So let me try, these all three are friends, so I'm going to try, I want them to be friends, but we're done as well. So let me tell you a little bit about them, and I'm trying not to embarrass them or myself as we go through. So I'm going to start on my left. On my left, your right. So that's Suzanne Martin. And Suzanne is out at Motorola on the profitable side of the business. Senior director, I call it, I can say that.
You can say that, you're right.
All right, senior director of marketing, home and network mobility. Suzanne's got a role that she'll tell you about, leading solutions and account marketing for a $5 billion North American business. You know, she works with enterprises like Verizon, Sprint, Comcast, Time Warner. She's also driven corporate marketing at Motorola. She's University of Chicago MBA. She graduated from Illinois. She's the incoming president of the VMA. Again, she's a great marketer, a great friend. Welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you.
So Isadora Lagos, who's in the middle, is past president of the VMA. We're delighted that we've got her here today. Packaged goods marketer originally. She'll tell us more about that. Consumer marketer. Converted to the good side of B2B, and we're delighted. Isadora works for one of the best financial services companies in the world, William Blair. William Blair is a 100-year-old Chicago firm, great quality, great talent, and if you are a person of wealth and means, which I'm not, unfortunately, you might be a client of William Blair. William Blair targets their audience very carefully, very well, and they're very well led. Now, Isadora is a Fulbright scholar, as I remember. She's Phi Beta Kappa, and now I'm embarrassing her, right? Graduated out of Indiana, MBA out of Indiana, and I'll stop there. We're delighted to have you in the program. Teresa Pogenball is a graduate of University of Nebraska, so I have a red folder. I wouldn't come in here without that. Also a good friend, Executive Director, Global Image. I mean, Teresa drives the global brand for Accenture, a $26 billion enterprise. I mean, truly a global organization. You know, Teresa joined Accenture in 1986, and so I can't count that. Is that 22, 23 years?
Exactly.
Yeah, say so, wow. How many people in the department? Oh, that would be tough.
In marketing, 650 in marketing communications now.
Okay. Well, one of the things that Jennifer, one of her colleagues, said is that Teresa's people don't leave. They like to stay there, and I think that's just a high compliment. And I know some of your staff is in the audience today. You were one of 15 executives identified as best and brightest by B2B, and I know Alice Booker's in the room today. So B2B is honored, Teresa. And Teresa led one of the most successful, if not the most successful, B2B rebranding programs when she took Anderson Consulting and renamed them and rebranded them Accenture. So this lady was responsible for that. It's rumored it was $150 to $175 million spend. I hear it was less, but that's the kind of programs that Teresa's been responsible for. So University of Illinois, MBA, and I'll stop there. Welcome, Teresa. I thought the best way to kind of get us started, and that'll put a little bit of light perhaps in their eyes at some point. Maybe I can start, Isadora. You want to kind of kick off? And I thought each of these talented marketers might just take 3 to 5 minutes and talk about a program that would give us context for discussion. So Isadora is going to talk about a program that she does, I think, more about events and marketing and helping the sales organization. Then Suzanne, and then Teresa. Is that okay with you?
Sure, that's fine. Okay. Let me just put events into a context because they're really not sales events. They're really about access to people and information and influencing, really not selling. So we basically create environments, whether they're our own or whether we tag on to major industry events. So RSNA, which is the Radiological Society of North America, I'm sure everybody goes to those events, or HIMSS, which is a health information type of event. And we host smaller events off of those, but they're for C-level people, and the access is limited. They get a lot of peer-to-peer contact, which is very valuable for this set of folks. And then we host a lot of our own events. So in June, we'll be having our 29th annual Growth Stock Conference, and in October, our 12th annual Private Equity Conference. And let me just pick the Private Equity Conference, if I might. We have 400 C-level investors. These are people who are bringing their checkbooks for millions of dollars. They attend, and they come and listen to 60 companies that are not public, are, you know, at various stages in their development, and they're basically trying to capital raise. So we bring these two groups together, and it's very significant for the C-level marketer, both for the C-level person creating or presenting and trying to tell their story and get the investment dollars, and for the private equity people who are willing to write checks and want high-quality pre-screened companies. So we're creating this environment for them to interact. Now, what's the benefit for us is if that company is looking to go public, if that company is looking to sell itself, down the road, they have made a connection with us. We get to spend an entire day with them, our bankers, our professionals. And so that's the long-term payoff of creating these special, very targeted events. I mean, they're small. But this audience is small. This isn't millions and millions of people like consumer marketing. This is a very finite, knowable audience. And I was going to share a story of how it doesn't work, because it happened to us when I first joined the firm. Someone had bought a high price tag for us, and we don't really spend a whole lot on marketing and advertising. But they got us access to the Ryder Cup, and the Ryder Cup is, you know, played every couple of years between the UK and the US, and this was in Michigan that year. And we thought, well, this is great. We're going to invite, you know, all these chief executive officers to the Ryder Cup. And we started inviting them, and we started getting turned down. And one of the people that we invited was a very good client of ours. And when we got to the event, we saw him get off of a plane with Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan's private plane. So, you know, that's why it's like that was a huge event. It was too big for us. It was too big for us. We didn't have a significant sponsorship. We were lost in the crowd. And frankly, these CEOs had better access with somebody else. Obviously, a free ride with Michael Jordan to the event, and I'm sure they had much, much nicer accommodations. So we have really, we learned a good lesson from that, but we really try to target these events. So we go to these, not the Ryder Cup, the non-sexy RSNA conferences and conventions, but then we host our own, where we also get several hundred people that we may be doing business with or have done business with in the past. So that's sort of how we, in a nutshell, run that program. Is that answering your question?
Mr. Rahm, I was going to ask you, I had the opportunity to moderate a panel at the Wealth Management
Conference. Or Family Wealth Conference.
And I just thought you might talk a little bit about how you use thought leadership. I just think William Blair does a great job with events and targeting. How did you use thought leadership? We had authors at that event. Maybe you could just talk about that.
Right. Our Family Wealth Conference is targeted at private investors with $10 million or more of investable assets. And now that does translate to CEOs, entrepreneurs, I mean, obviously philanthropists, a variety, a great cross-section of high-net-worth individuals. But we collect everybody there for the day, and it's really targeted to multiple generations. So, you know, we're trying to get away from that, it's my father's Oldsmobile kind of thing. It's like, you know, our firm is someplace for everyone. And we do. We bring authors in. Terry Savage has, in fact, Terry Savage moderated a women's panel talking about women in investing. John Glenn, Senator Glenn, was there. He did the keynote luncheon speech about, you know, how he's raised his children to think about money and fiscal responsibility. We've had UFC people there, and Pat Ryan spoke at the 2007 event. So we really try to concentrate. We have five tracks. And people just pick each hour. They pick where they want to go. We encourage families to split up and regroup so that they can share the information that they've gotten. It's a very concentrated, it's a one-day event. But again, we get to spend a whole day with people. And it's really not about us. It's not about us just, you know, hitting every presentation. It's about who we bring together and who we can access. Michael moderated a great panel of three Chicago entrepreneurs, Vosges Chocolat, David Weinstein from the Chicago Entrepreneurial Society. So it's really the kinds of stories that we can bring to them, the kinds of access, the kinds of people they can talk to afterwards. But it's our environment. We do obviously control it. We brand it. And it's very memorable for them. And that's really what we have found to be a good formula that works.
All right. So Isadora is an expert at working with a very senior level team of executives, great quality of brand, and some really high-quality events for high net worth and senior executives. Let me turn to Suzanne, as I say again, works on the profitable side of Motorola. Go for it.
Okay. So to your point, most people know Motorola as the mobile devices business, and the side of the business I'm on is called Broadband Mobility Solutions. And specifically, my team works on, again, with Comcast and Time Warner and AT&T and such, on connected home products. So many of you have set-top boxes in your home. That's a Motorola product. We work behind the scenes in the network as well on compression technologies and things that bring HD content to your, you know, to your plasma and your big TV that now you want all this beautiful content. To get through that pipe, there's a lot of technologies required to get that to happen. And so that's what, you know, my business does. I will speak a little bit, though, to the broader group, which also includes government and public safety, because I've got a few examples from that. But we do work well with the sales team to try to reach CIOs, you know, CTOs, police chiefs, fire chiefs, because the business that we're in, we're not selling, you know, consumer packaged goods. It is multi-million dollar systems and networks, and even if we are selling devices, it's in the millions, right? It's a lot. So we are dealing at the highest levels of the organization, and our challenge is always how do you foster and strengthen that relationship that sales has? How do you keep them on message? How do you sort of, you know, evoke experiential platforms for the sales team to kind of work with them to accelerate the sales cycle? Because the other issue we've got, too, is that these are not quick sales. Particularly in the government side, if we're dealing with the state of Illinois, or you know, could be a country, you know, where we're trying to sell in a huge multi, could be several hundred million dollar size system. These things don't, you know, happen quickly. So you're trying to come up with marketing tools that are going to help accelerate and facilitate and move that along. And the other dimension too is that while we may be focusing on the police chief, the fire chief, or the CTO, there's a whole influencer community that surrounds them. That really you really need to market to as well, because they're looking to their trusted guy or girl on the inside, right, to say, well, tell me about these guys, tell me about this brand. And at the end of the day, it comes down to trust. You know, can we trust them? We're going to spend all this money. Are they going to be able to make it happen? As much as it is about, do they have the latest technology? So we use events. We use, you know, the Super Bowl's coming up, for example. So we do try to use some sponsorships that we've got to our advantage to get key executives in. You know, so to your point, sometimes, you know, you've got to make sure you're inviting the right... There's always the bigger, better deal. So,
we're not doing this,
you know. So you're always kind of up against the, well, they're going to be invited by Jordan. But, you know, we do use that, again, small, concentrated group of people. The other thing you get up against sometimes also are policy, you know, constraints around what's the value of the experience you're providing to them. So you have to be very careful, particularly with government market. We're really, really careful on how we, you know, how we do that. So what Michael asked me to focus on was interactive and web. So I've got a few slides. I'm just going to run you through a few examples of what we do. And it's more tools and tactics than it is programs. But one of the things we find as we're evolving our marketing mix is how crucial the web is, even in getting to the C-level. So I'm just going to, and again, the influencers around them. So I'm just going to run through, hopefully this works. And I might have to talk backwards, too. Sorry about that. So I can see what's up there. Let's see. Oh, let's try. There we go. So just a couple of factoids. You know, 80% of tech buyers, you know, are using the web as their primary research tool. And, again, that's not just C-level. That's overall. But, again, that's really crucial for us as we're trying to, you know, sometimes initiate a sale, move it to the next step. And, you know, manufacturer websites in particular are in the top three in terms of importance. And it's something that you really have got to get that website right. And for Motorola, we get about 1.3 million visitors, I believe, monthly to our website. So, you know, people are coming there. They're looking for information. And so, you know, one of the things we've done is we used to have about 60-plus websites. You know, everybody's managing their own thing and their own deal, and we've combined those. And we've also made it more customer focused, so it is by segment: operators, you know, enterprises, and again, public safety and government. You know, what we're trying to do, and I'll show you a few examples of this, is that we do have immersive brand stories and microsites to help people get the breadth and the bigger story on our technology, because our portfolio is pretty huge, and one of our challenges is how do you structure that in a cohesive and coherent way, particularly when you're talking C-level, and they, you know, if they are looking for a quick, just give me a little bit about you, you know, you've got to give them that higher level and not get too into the weeds. One of the tools that we use, we call it an e-zine. It's a thought leadership monthly piece that goes out that is basically an online magazine. It's an opt-in. We do find that a lot of our higher-level clients do opt-in for it, though, because the information that you're trying to promote or to market to them on, they don't care necessarily maybe about your technology, but as a COO, they care about margin. They care about, you know, OPEX, you know, and CAPEX. And so you're trying to say, or in these times, tough economic times, customer retention. These are their issues. So that's what we talk about. And then that's a sort of a door opener to say, well, now how do our technologies help you with that? But they don't want to hear the technology story first. So it's one thing we really try to do. And then I mentioned earlier microsites. If you go to the Motorola.com service provider page, we just launched this for CES just a couple of weeks ago. And it's a very nice immersive piece where, and again, it's static, so it's hard to sort of see the richness of it. But you can go through and get the high-level story on our technology, and we find these very effective. At the end, I'll show you one we did for government that's award-winning and that has really done a good job for us. Another thing that C-level really appreciates are case studies and testimonials. They want to benchmark, right? They want to see what everybody else is doing. And so we have a video case study library. By the way, we do use video a lot when we communicate because for the business we're in, broadband business, video leadership is one of our key differentiators, so we want to talk in video, so we do that a lot. So if you ever want to just check that out, we have a whole library of online case studies. And actually, here's an example. I mean, you know, people want to, the CELA want to hear what Craig McCaw has to say, you know, about, you know, how he's using our technology to be advanced and early entrant into the market. We also use our executives to speak to executives, right? So, and some of you might remember Eduardo Conrado. He was one of the BMA speakers in the past year. And we do find that's also effective for us to have them speak again about the issues that the C-level are grappling with and, again, how our technologies are addressing that. We have video demos. Sometimes, again, you want to get in front of people and they don't want to come to you. You know, you try to just give as many options as possible. Webinars. We do use a lot of webinars as well. Again, this is more for the influencer community around the C-level, but we're trying to get that message out there so that they're helping us with that. Events, we just said CES, we do put up events portal. This is more of a broader tool, but we do find, for example, a lot of people don't come to these big shows, that we give access to our blogs, our releases, our information, access to the microsites through here, et cetera. And again, we also use blogs as a tool to communicate, and again, it's not just us, you know, writing. So I'm trying to do this quick for you guys. Let me draw this. So just in general, because I don't have a lot of specific program results, but I'll say that what we're doing from an EDM, you know, a direct marketing standpoint, interactive, it's we get above average results. And part of that is list management, et cetera, but we find that we're having pretty good effectiveness with these. We're just getting into content syndication. I don't have any feedback or results on this, but we're starting to dabble. You know, I don't know if I'm going to go through this necessarily, but just to say that, you know, we will take specific campaigns and run them. For example, in this case, we have cable operators that are going to start upgrading their networks, and all of you are going to be able to start to get modems. They're called DOCSIS 3.0 modems. And it's going to be you think it's fast now, it's going to be even faster. But one of the things we have to do is to influence these decision makers to not only to upgrade the network and sell the modems, so we're, you know, we've got a kind of a solution play going here. So, you know, we did put up a microsite to start to engage them in this dialogue, and it actually won us some awards from CableFax as an industry trade.
When you sell a deal to Verizon,
yes.
So how much might it be worth?
could be several hundred million dollars.
All right, so several hundred million dollars, and you've got to get that whole influencer community.
Yep.
There's probably a committee of C-level executives.
Yeah, it's committee in their influence community. Yeah.
Okay. So, again, C-level execs. All right.
Yep.
Very good stuff. We're going to have lots of questions.
Yep.
Let's go to Accenture. Therese, as you start off, who's your target audience? What are you selling?
Well, I'm selling consulting, technology, and outsourcing services. So a full breadth of services, and underneath each one of those, there are service segments as well. So quite a complicated mix of services to a variety of C-suite targets. And it varies. The target audience varies depending on the service. So, for example, if it's outsourcing in the financial area, so the CFO and potentially the CEO are huge decision makers. And if it's a strategy project in marketing, it might be the CMO, maybe the CEO, maybe not. So it's a variety. So really the top C-suite, senior most executives in those corporate functions. Very, very large companies and governments and enterprises. So, you know, $5 billion and above companies on a global scale. And again, they're very hard to get to. We talked about things that are very relevant to Accenture in terms of long lead times, huge dollar amounts on the table. I mean, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of contracts in the outsourcing arena, much less perhaps in strategy, but the stakes are viewed to be very high when you're working on a strategic engagement, helping a company chart its path to success. So the stakes are very, very high. My job is to position Accenture against that broad target audience on a global basis, really at the image level. And the idea is to keep Accenture front and center, and not just to make them aware of Accenture and all these areas in which we sell, but to make them think of us differently and better than the competitor set, so that when they get to that point in time where they're considering someone for a particular job, they think of Accenture in the short set, and then most importantly, when it comes to preference, we're really viewed as being very, very different in terms of that choice, so that they prefer Accenture over our competitors. So really a broad range of activities in image development, but really driving behaviors much beyond just that image level. What I'm going to share with you today is a program that developed over the fall, and a handful of my team members are here who played a huge role in getting it done. If you think about Accenture, we have a huge ad campaign that's highly visible. You probably see us if you travel in airports, you see us on TV, whether it's CNN or Fox or golf tournaments, and you see us online, etc. Very pervasive, single campaign run around the world. And if you think about it, it's like a big ship. You know, how do you change that on the fly is really a big question that we faced this year. That we launched our campaign, a new evolution of it in the fall in September, which is a typical cycle for us. It's a, you know, back to business month, very important on a global scale, particularly in Europe. We launched a campaign that was a continuation of a campaign strategy that we developed, positioning Accenture as being the company to help you chart your path to success to be a high-performing company. And the tagline, you know, you see the familiar Tiger Woods, who's become our icon for high performance that we use. And the tagline positions Accenture very strategically on that idea, saying we know what it takes to be a tiger. Tiger is the penultimate performer. We, Accenture, know how to drive that performance agenda for you as a company. And what happened in September, as all of you know, is that the economic climate just continued to deteriorate day to day. Not only did it continue to deteriorate here in the U.S., but it really fanned out globally. The only markets in September we weren't sure were having huge issues were China and Japan, maybe potentially India at that point in time, but how things change, don't they? But at the end of the day, our CEO is really an amazing person. He spends a ton of time with our clients. You might imagine with hundreds of thousands of dollars on the table, he likes to meet and greet our clients, and he wants to make sure that those clients know who he is and that he stands behind our brand. But he called in September and he said, you know, I'm getting a little bit worried about our advertising. You know, this cheery, happy tiger just doesn't really feel relevant for the times, and it particularly doesn't feel relevant for the kinds of conversations I'm having out there in the real world. And, you know, as a marketer, to have your CEO say that, you feel, at least it's a little humbling when you feel like you're always out in front of everything. You're like, oh, we're behind for once. Usually we're out ahead telling him we need to change. But what we did is we took a step back and immediately changed the portfolio mix of our ads. And what we did is we looked at each ad and we said, if it doesn't speak directly to the economic circumstances, we're not running it. So we sort of changed the mix of what we had. But then we stepped back and challenged ourselves. One constraint we had, many of you may or may not be aware of if you deal with celebrities, and that is we shoot commercials with Tiger once a year. And the commercials that we launched in September have been shot in May. And we can't just on a whim say, hey, Tiger, are you available? We want to change our ads up. We just don't have that kind of flexibility. So particularly with TV as being the centerpiece of what we're doing, it's very, you get in a really, you know, frustrating situation if you just think, I kind of have the film I have with Tiger. I have a lot of happy, high-performing Tiger. I don't have a lot of sad Tiger. But what the change is, well, and it's sort of true, you sort of know, you know exactly all the commercials you've ever made with Tiger. But what the change is, we sort of stepped back and said, let's think about how we can do this versus getting frustrated about the challenge and how daunting the challenge is. And essentially, within about a four-week time frame, and I'm not kidding about the time frame, we gave our ad agency the assignment to change the ads, really to make sure that they're speaking to the economic times. And so the idea was to really create a connection and a relevance to the message that we're delivering. So that instead of it being passed over mistakenly, you know, oh, Tiger, happy person, that's not how I feel, we wanted that hook so that it spoke to the economy and drew the reader in, and then better for us, positioning Accenture even more important decision. When times are bad, who do you want to choose? You really want to choose Accenture. The decisions are even more important now. So really, it was really a nice angle for us. What we wanted to make sure we avoided, though, was something like ambulance chasing. We didn't want to feel like we were out there going, oh, times are terrible, you better be afraid, hire Accenture. The tone and the manner needed to be just perfect. Relating to them, not scaring them, but positioning Accenture right at the spot of that trust and who really do you want to turn to in these bad times. So the agency came up with some new ads, and I'm going to share them in just a second. But what was interesting is when we presented the ads to our CEO, and this was, you know, 2 weeks later, the TV we had just tinkered with, because we were sort of saying, you know, this is kind of what we have. And he really pushed back and said, you know, I still feel like we don't have it right. And what we were able to do was really take bits of film of Tiger from different shoots and really kind of start over with the pieces that we have. And I think it's a learning lesson for sometimes we can get ourselves feeling like, I can't solve that problem because of these constraints. And sometimes it just takes another push, another thought. And what the yield was really a whole portfolio of ads that looked like we created it from whole cloth in the summer, and we hadn't. We did it on the fly. They were in market. I want to say by the time we tested, they were probably in market within 6 weeks. And two of those weeks really were burnt internally through internal approvals, meaning, is the wording right? I mean, when you change this much and you talk about the economy, the delicacy of the wording, a lot of people have visibility and optics to it. And one last point, when we tested these ads, what was so interesting is people said, oh my gosh, they're so relevant. Wow, no one else in your category is talking to me about the economy. This is so differentiating. And thirdly, how did you get this done this fast? I'm just amazed. It really sets Accenture apart as an agile, nimble company that could help me, because you can turn that ship around so quickly. So what you're going to see is you're going to see three print ads. I'm going to start with the first one. My technology assistant's very good. What you'll see here, a lot of deliberate things strategically. You might be used to our old campaign, the We Know What It Takes to Be a Tiger campaign. Uses illustrated lines on top of Tiger, and it basically dimensionalizes ideas and findings from research we do. We felt that it was very important to have the ad look different. And as a marketer, we also look at continuity a lot of the time. You say you want to make it sort of feel the same. But here we wanted to be disruptive so that people would stop and say, what is this message from Accenture? It's different from what I normally see. You can see that the headline is very telegraphed, why high performers shine even when the sun doesn't. What you will see is its connection to our positioning strategy. We're still talking about high performance. The picture, of course, draws you in because it feels much more in keeping with how people are feeling. And we did spend a lot of time on the nuances of the picture, so you don't want to be too scary. This one, you know, spoke just right. And then our closing line, we adapted for the times. Again, the old line was, we know what it takes to be a tiger. Here, at a time when it's tougher than ever to be a tiger, it's even more crucial to know what it takes. Talk to us. And again, that talk to us invitation wasn't something that we typically did. We typically drove people to our website. And we took a turn here to speak to them as individuals and really invite them, you know, to call us. We're here to help you. You can see the next ad. Again, same note in terms of the visual. You see Tiger really can't see. We're not sure if he's, you know, seeing where, you know, where his next path is. Headline, how can you plan ahead when you can hardly see ahead? And again, very relevant in terms of the times. Draw you in, the exact same payoff line in terms of, you know, reminding them that, you know, it really is tough times, but they can turn to Accenture in these tough times to help you plot the course. And there's one more ad here. And again, you know, we can relate to it, right? You know, it's not a setback, it's a test. And again, the tone here is very different. It's not saying things are dire. It's saying, we know times are tough, but we got to you know, you got to step forward. You got to, you know, step out in front. A lot of the messages when you read the ads or some of our onlines are really around our learning from having been through, you know, other, you know, bad economic cycles and the fact that we can bring that to bear. The notion that those who sit around in the sidelines really aren't going to get ahead, they're going to get behind. And leaders really in these times really do take advantage and capitalize on the opportunities presented. And instead of just being afraid, we were kind of giving people that confidence to get out there and really do something. Even though the path isn't clear, no one knows the right answers today. But, you know, bring a trusted advisor to your side and we'll help you. So what we're going to do now is we're going to play in succession our three commercials. And you can see, well, you probably won't be able to notice that they've been pieced together and adapted. They are former TV commercials in most instances, just adapted for the times, and the line added as well.
Are we hearing the volume?
No.
We have tested it before.
It's just got to be turned up. It's coming
is
through.
It this thing?
I don't know. Okay, maybe there's volume over there. Maybe we can cut volume back. Why don't you redo it? And I just don't know.
You know what? It was so loud it maybe went the other direction. Remember? For those of you who were in the room early, it was very loud. They probably heard it on the street.
Yeah. Try it now. And otherwise, we'll get David and we'll show him after we do some questions. Keep going. That's not it. I must not be on the right dial.
I don't want to change all the files. There's audio coming through here.
You might want to start it over.
Let's try one. Sorry about that.
It's fine now.
And the time I got to talk to see what lies ahead. And the future seems difficult to navigate. And since you've experienced and capabilities, I hope you still on course. Well, it's tougher than ever to be a tangler. It's even more crucial to know what it takes to be essential, high performance, and delivery.
You know, I don't think the audio is kind of poor, so I don't know, but maybe you can see that too. You can see them online when you go back to your office, but I think the key thing here is just little adjustments, like the former Tiger commercial, he hit every one of those in the first one. And we just dialed back, had him miss a few, add the line about the economy, and add the line about, you know, when times are tougher, it's even more crucial to know what it takes to be a Tiger. And then testing those, the calibration of the message really was appropriate, and we had a very good research firm that did that for us.
But I won't
Michael
tell you.
Michael did the testing for us.
We appreciate the opportunity to do that. But we're going to get some AV help, and we'll show the others at the end. But let's talk more now about some Q&A. And I just want to try to sum up the kind of product and service mix that these three represent, right? So we've got telecommunications or communications, hardware, and infrastructure. And you do have to tell us about what it was like to be on the NFL sidelines that day, too.
Sure.
One of the things about working in Motorola, she gets to go to NFL pro games, you know, where they've got the headset, Motorola.
You definitely see a lot of branding.
Yeah, a lot of branding.
So Suzanne will talk about that.
Okay.
Isadora, financial services, wealth management, C-level executives, chief investment officers, CEOs. And then Teresa, we've got consulting, outsourcing, and technology consulting. We've got CEOs, CIOs, CFOs, the whole C-suite. All right, so they're marketing to the C-suite. Actually, Ellis, I'm going to steal that question that you mentioned, but this is really Ellis Booker's question, and I'll try to get it right. The question was, in these difficult economic times, is it hard to integrate new kinds of marketing? Why don't you answer
that?
Go ahead, Ellis. I yield to the pro.
You mentioned that Accenture was B2B's 2008 best integrated campaign for Tiger Woods. But we have a similar time frame problem in that we pick our best awards in August, early September, and you change them. I hadn't realized. So I'm going to cover.
Hopefully,
that.
We still win.
We had an experience in New York. Anyway, the question was this. In current business conditions, are you ladies more or less likely to try new experimental techniques? And you can expand on your answer.
You know, I don't know that's a really hard question. I think more or less is hard. I mean, one, we're really benefiting from not suffering from budget cuts at this point in time. I think that is really a testament to the ROI that we've driven and the role that what we do plays. And we're very, very proud of our business focus in terms of what we do. We're very, very, very sharp on metrics. And I'm told by others when they ask what we do that they've never heard of anyone doing quite so much research against a target. So we know a lot about the impact of what we do. I would say we keep a sharp lens on the impact of any idea. We embrace new ideas, and we absolutely, want to, be at the forefront of things on the web, et cetera. But we definitely have a sharp eye to the return on investment. So I don't think it's more or less. I would say we're very realistic about things. And I'll just give you an example. We do a lot of research with our target. And I would say in the C-suite, given the length of time in the influencing cycle that, the role that you need to play, and the kind of target, everybody's after these targets. We're all chasing the same people. Mm-hmm. And you might imagine there's lots of other companies chasing these people. They don't have a lot of bandwidth. Much like I always use myself as an example and think, if I can't keep up with my email or my, my physical pile of magazines to read at the office is piled up like this, how the heck does a CEO wade through and skim through all the information he or she needs, much less marketing messages, So I look at it from that point of view in terms of the ROI. But what I also look at is insights that you can glean from doing research with that mindset that might be different in terms of ways to get them, things that you could do that are different, things that they value, things that are important to them versus things they may never see. So I think getting that insight's important up front and making sure everything you have an ROI measurement so that you can drop things that are not doing well and then you can, add other new things. So for us, it's just a constant portfolio adjustment.
Isadora, what about you and then Suzanne and Ellis' question?
We have been impacted. Obviously, our whole industry has. It's interesting. We were talking about this before. You're a good homeowner. You pay your mortgage, and you haven't been late on anything, but everything around you kind of collapses, and that's right. Kind of where we are. We didn't do the Madoff thing. We didn't, we didn't resecuritize, have no third-party debt, but you know what? Our playground is the markets, and that's falling apart around us. So on the one hand, we have pulled back in our conservative mode on some of the spending. It's been more of the mass targeting spending, mostly coming from the private wealth management side. However, on the corporation, on the corporate side, corporate finance, CEOs, CFOs, we really have not pulled back. We're still doing the same programming. I think you have to be careful that when something really works, and you're reaching your target, and it's almost been institutionalized. All of our e-marketing, all of our events, all of our success stories we have not pulled back on that. And it's been very interesting for us because we've actually been the beneficiary of part of the downturn. Because Bear Stearns collapsed, Lehman collapsed. We're seeing business because that whole messaging that we've been doing that's been consistent for 74 years, but thanks.
I thought it was 100.
Nope, 74. We'll be 75 next year.
We're going to the party next year.
Yeah. The point of that long term, it's, you're always there and you've got the consistent mm-hmm. message. And, we've always said we're conservative. We have no third-party debt. We don't go out and experiment. We're not the lead. And now this is a time like this is when it's actually coming back to benefit us.
That's such an interesting point we talk about consistency because it is so mm-hmm. easy to just say marketing is discretionary. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen in studying our competitors over really within the last 10 years, two downturns, what tends to happen is people pull back, like they'll invest for a year or two, and they'll pull back dramatically for several years. And what happens is they lose completely the benefit mm-hmm. of that investment ever. I mean, it goes away. I mean, the R goes away really, really quickly. It might last for 6 months to a year, but it dramatically tails off after two. Mm-hmm. So I think that selling that continuity of you've got to keep the base level, you don't want to go dark, is really, really essential in this marketplace.
Well, particularly in our sector, because this is a financial sector-driven event, really. And so for us to fall off would signal that, even they have problems. So we actually mm-hmm. ran some incremental ads in September, just kind of a CEO checklist of what are you looking for? You're looking for somebody who's been around. You're looking for senior level professionals. You're looking for people with no third party debt who haven't resecuritized products. And you're basically looking for stability. And it was an opportunity for us to to come out with something that was not, hey, look at us, everybody's falling apart, we're good. It was not a boastful chest pounding approach. It was just like, here's what you need to feel like you're working with people you can trust again. And it was reassuring to our clients, and it was eye-opening to the broader audience.
Suzanne, what about Motorola from your perspective? To Ellis's question, and what are you doing in these tough times?
Right. So I'll speak not so much to Motorola in aggregate as I am going to the B2B side, because they're very, it's a tale of two cities right now. So let me just talk to B2B. We are not necessarily pulling back. It is more of what's working, why would we pull it back, right? But it's more, how are we optimizing the marketing mix? So we're looking to our events, for example, and saying, you know, what's superfluous spend, right? You know, some things that maybe kind of got by a little bit in the past. No, got to start to really get more rigorous and ruthless about cutting it, and yet not getting rid of what's the most important element of it, and actually increasing the spend on things like experiential marketing. How can you build in one or two key components that when you're, again, bringing the C-suite in, they can have a visceral, immersive experience that then, again, they remember. So we're trying to make sure we do not cut that. In addition, our sales team is looking to us more than ever before in tougher times, right, to help them tell those stories, to differentiate us more. Also because, you know, we work with both the telcos and the cable guys. And, you know, they're starting to compete now, which they really didn't before. So before, you were Comcast customers because you had to be a Comcast customer. And now you could maybe pick AT&T U-verse. You know, so they're starting to feel more, and they're looking to us more, actually, to help them figure out how to compete in that new world. So that does impact our marketing mix and our content and everything. But we're not pulling back. And in terms of new tools, we're, you know, I think it's a culture of ours in the marketing side and the B2B side to try new things. I think Eduardo has done a great job of encouraging that. So particularly in interactive, we're really trying to dial up and investigate and try new things. But again, not necessarily in a response to economic conditions, as it is just continuing to hone and fine-tune the mix.
Just a couple questions, and I'm going to open it to the audience. What's really challenging and a real pain being a C-level marketer, marketing to C-level executives? What's a lot of fun, and do you ever wake up wishing that you could be, you know, marketing Pepsi instead of what you market?
Okay.
And all three of you can take that if you like.
All right. I'll just do a quick response to that. So the challenges include, for us with long sales cycles, we may have executives rotate and turn in and out, and now you're trying to almost start over again sometimes with new folks. Sometimes they have a perspective of your brand from another engagement, so if they're an IT manager, they may not know our equity on the government side, so you're trying to, again, do branding as much as you are solution-level marketing. It's access to them. You know, a lot of those are the challenges. In terms of would I ever want to wake up, I guess, and be a consumer marketer one day, I like the challenge. I think it's high visibility stuff. If I were to come out of school or talk to people coming out of school, I'd say, you know, don't just go, I'm going to go work for Frito-Lay or something automatically. Just, you know, give a thought to the B2B side because it's some big dollars. You're dealing at the C-level, C-suite, and can have a high impact on your business. So I find it a challenge. And
so like Andrew knew he's not going to recruit you at Pepsi. Isadora, what about
depends
you?
On the paycheck. Let me just
okay,
keep
well,
that
maybe, maybe,
maybe a little turn, a little rotation, but you know.
All right, Isadora?
I have to agree that the challenges are greater. I came from the consumer packaged goods side. I was at Hallmark for 11 years, and it was great. It was a great progression because there are a lot of classical marketing skills that you learn when you're marketing a product to mass consumers. But this is more challenging. These are thought leaders in and of themselves. They're sitting, you know, they're out there getting all kinds of information. So the exciting part and the challenging part is to give them something that they don't have. And that requires thought leadership coming from our side. It requires the right access points. It definitely requires an integrated plan because some people may be more online oriented, some people may be more event oriented, more hands-on. So we really try and cover the gamut there because you just never know what touch point is going to tip business in your favor. So, you know, I think that's what keeps it exciting and fun. And you know what? When it works, I mean, the buzz after you run a campaign or you do an event or you just have this great success with some electronic marketing and you get all this feedback and you realize that you have penetrated their consciousness. And that is very gratifying. And you see it more because
they're fine. I mean, there's just a finite number. They're a very knowable target. It's not 18 to 24-year-old males, and there's millions or billions if you're in China and India. This is like you're marketing to LeBron James. I mean, it's so focused. You know everything about him. So you get the feedback, and it's very gratifying.
You know, I'm going to echo. I love what I do. I love the category. You know, the breadth of sort of the technology underpinning, you know, I would know that you share, Suzanne, keeps things dynamic and it ensures the industry grows. I, too, give advice to folks coming out of school to consider B2B, particularly as it relates to the growth of the company. I mean, you know, I'm sitting here at a company for 20-plus years, really largely driven by the growth of the technology sector and the changes in the demands. If it were the same every day, you know, we would all get bored. It changes every day from a marketing channel opportunity, but also what we're selling to the market changes every day. So you're, you know, I'm sure my team's over there nodding like, yes, we work a lot of hours because of the change. But I think that those people who really like a dynamic environment is a perfect place. And I think for those of us who've been in B2B for a long time, we've also seen a maturity in B2B marketing. And, you know, I worked with Michael years ago, and it was sort of like, let's do a press release, let's print it, and let's send it to some clients. You know, it just levels of
that's what I was like as a B2B marketer.
No, it was more the, I will tell you, it's more the business leaders relegating the marketing role then. And I just think we've come a long way over those 20 years where they really can see the role of marketing and how it plays a role in driving business success. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's a difference. If that weren't true, all of us would have had our budgets cut yet, you know, September, October, November, because it wouldn't be viewed as an essential investment in these times. Mm-hmm. And we've done that, and I think that's what makes it fun, and now it's our job to kind of take it to the next level.
Well, if I could just piggyback onto Teresa's point, because you know what, this isn't the CEO looking at us to say, right, what can you do? If you don't have collaboration with the CEO, I mean, the CEO is the peer-to-peer. The CFO is the peer-to-peer. I mean, that's why people come out, and that's who they communicate with, and it's very hand-to-hand combat. You really have to engage. You really have to collaborate with the senior people in your organization who go head-to-head with all these various targets, because it's a very personal, integrated relationship, and that's how you make yourself inextricable, right, as a brand. You know, they can't pull away from you because you have woven this great web, and you're really necessary to their business.
What is it? You know, I was toying with two questions, and I do want to open it up. So on one hand, at the Spencer Stuart conference, CMO conference at the Rainbow Room, a group of senior level marketers, and they were asked by the moderator, would you ever want to be the CEO? And I was surprised. All three of them said, no, I want to be the CMO. And so I wanted to ask you guys that question. Do you ever really want... Is this the job you really love? Should CMOs be CEOs? And what is it that, you know, that got you here? I close out with some advice to people. So it's a two-part question. Let's stay with the first part, and then I'll serve up the second. Okay. What about it? CMOs becoming CEOs? What's your ambition?
Tino, I would say no. My ambition is not to be the CEO. And what I do, I don't have the background. If I plugged in a bunch of, you know, ERP systems in my career, I'd be fine. I'd be ready to go. But I don't think in my business it would ever be the case. But I really do love what I do. I think it, just making sure marketing continues to drive toward, driving toward helping more in the sale. So for us, we started out as more image development, making sure that people were aware we were even in the space when we were Anderson Consulting. We built from that. What we're really focused on more is getting really in the business of helping either get, you know, a lot more lead gen, and then closing transactions where marketing really does get engaged. And that, again, it just broadens the portfolio of what value we can add in that value chain. And again, it's fun, it's pioneering. I mean, a lot of the things we're doing in closing deals is, if you think about it, it can be, you know, a 3 to 6 month process, but you get marketing at the table with our executives, and then all of a sudden the possibilities of what you can do to really make that target feel as though you want that job, you're qualified for that job, you're differentiated, it really becomes possible. And then they start demanding, you know, more of that. And we have 675 people for a $27 billion company. There aren't enough of us. So then you face the challenge of, I guess we need some more, and that's what you need. You know, that's, to me, the conversation, the evolution, taking it to the next level.
All right, so marketing's clearly got a seat at the table at Accenture.
No, that's not I would not want the CEO role. I think the point is I feel part of that C-suite because being an advisor to the CEO is wonderful, and being able to bring those ideas, and we get to execute, we get to measure them, we get to be hands-on. It's very, you get a very holistic view as a CMO, and it's fun.
I mean, I wouldn't want the problems of the CEO. I like going and telling him what he's doing wrong and can we help him fix it.
Right.
But, I mean, that's not...
Ellis Booker's got that on tape.
No, no, please don't, because you can look him up. But we have a real voice, and we can help look at things 360 and provide that input. And I will tell you, my answer would probably be different if I didn't think the world of our CEO, because it's great working for somebody who says, come to the table. We need that marketing input. I need to balance that decision with a lot of different factors. So,
Suzanne.
Okay, ditto. I think I'm more wired for the marketing side than a general management, more of an operations focused role, which is what I think the CEO role is. And I have made a career at Motorola out of really, speaking of pioneering, just trying to get marketing to the table. And typically in a real tech-focused company, engineering is leading, sales is leading, and marketing is just, do me a video, do me a whatever for the, you know. So I've just made a religious calling out of trying to get marketing to a more, operational seat at the table. And I think that since the days of Jeffrey Frost, you may remember Jeffrey?
Sure.
There's been a tipping point at Motorola in terms of getting marketing really ramped up and sitting at that table, and I think we are brought in. I think there's more to be done, and I love the energy that's required to do that. It's my thing, so I just don't think I'd be more of a CEO type.
All right, let's go to the group. I've got time for a couple questions right there. So tell us your name. Tell us your question.
I'm Frank Pachoki. Isidore, how do you measure or evaluate the success of your
event? We track the spend. We track number of the people who attended. We track conversations. We track notes. I mean, not through listening devices or anything. But I mean, we know who's motivated and who's not. I mean, there's always a debrief. There's always a postmortem. On the electronic side, obviously, we track hits and opens and how much time people are spending on various portions of our site or our electronic interactions. And we know who they are. So we know that we're reaching people. And that's how we measure it. It's nowhere near the sophistication of an Accenture because most of it is manual. I mean, we do not have a CRM system. When we do something, we go out to all of our relationship managers and we ask them who should be there. I mean, when I say it's personal at our level, it is really personal. I mean, I know the client names because, it's a finite list. I mean, we know we're very, very targeted. But then we do measure the backside as well.
Other questions in the back? Yes. Tell us your name. Tell us your question.
Vanessa Jackson, do you have a different marketing mix for retention customers versus conquest customers? Do you do something special for conquest? When there's so few customers, getting one big account or losing one big account is a big deal. So what do you do for conquest customers?
I can speak a little bit to that. So we are definitely in the retention game primarily because, again, we know who the CIOs are, CEOs are of the telecom companies, right? And so it's not so much an acquisition as it is they're currently our customers, so what can we do to retain them? But when it does come to making sure that we're proactively ensuring that as that executive suite rotates, that we're continuing to keep them engaged, we use those thought leadership tools like that easing and certain things to keep in our blogs to kind of keep the word out there at a higher level so that when... And if we do, at trade shows, we may come across someone new, but for the most part, we know who these people are, and typically they're already our customers. So we do skew the mix more towards retention. We just use communications and PR and blogs and things to kind of keep that thought leadership and brand level out there, so that we're in the consideration set when anybody new is trying to bring us in or wants to bring us in.
Okay, let me get a couple more. Who else? Yes, in the back. Go ahead.
This is more for Isidora. With regards to William Blair, obviously a very conservative long-term company, over the last say 5 to 7 years, has there been an evolution in terms of how marketing is viewed by the Blair C-level suite? And if so, how would you characterize that?
Well, I can tell you, I joined the firm 8 years ago. There was no marketing department. So there's been a huge evolution. It's been kind of quicker than normal, but I think the one thing and the reason that I went to the firm is because there was always a brand, but it was based on reputation, which is something that happens to you. Basically, I mean, you do the best you can, but reputation is something that you earn. And we went to the point where we were proactively managing the brand, and that there's a strategy, and that there are, you know, strategies, tactics, everything around it. So and we also had a change in CEO. Not that really made a difference, because our past CEO is still there, and he was the one who brought everything in. But I think part of it is really just being honest with the CEO and really showing what you can do. And the question before about how you measure, showing that you do measure these things, then it does matter. And that, you know what, 3 years ago, in the course of 3 years, we know that three or four things happened with that target. And gee, they hired us to do their IPO or to do their acquisition. So it is long term. But I think these proof points and how we track and what we bring to the table in a more holistic manner has been noticed. And yes, it is more proactive now than it was 10 years ago.
Now, one last question. Go ahead.
Realistically, when Accenture, Motorola are there at Concording, there's a very good chance you're going to get access to the C-suite. Mm-hmm. But if you're a relatively small business and maybe not have great brand awareness, what specific advice would you give to people in that kind of situation?
Let's get all three of you on that. It's a good one.
Mm-hmm. That is a really good question. But it's a little more not that simple. I mean, I just use our own example. I mean, when we were Arthur Andersen and we were selling consulting services, what we found years ago was that we'd knock on the door and they'd say, you're an accountant. Like, we don't want you to put in our computer system. Mm-hmm. And so it's a similar example, meaning we got in, but they're like, you know, you're not people for us. We don't want to use you. And so then we really started developing an image for us in the space, which included a name change from Arthur Andersen to Andersen Consulting for that particular division of Arthur Andersen, and then driving image activities, very highly targeted image activities behind it, so that people then are aware you're in the space. Because people need to be aware that you're in the space to take a call. I mean, I think in the cycle, we look at it sort of image development, market development, and business development. Image is really creating the awareness and the highest level perception, and then market development is more granular communications from our view around the specific service line you're selling, and then business development is all about driving a particular sale one-to-one. So it sounds like you have more of an issue in the image that you can't get the invitations to come have the conversation.
Isadora, what would your advice be?
Well, I mean, we are that small company. I mean, we just started marketing probably 5 years ago in the UK, where people thought we were related to the Prime Minister, William Blair. So, I mean, people really didn't know who we were. And the way we approached it was just proof points. And this is where we advertise, and we have not pulled back. We're on the back cover of Private Equity News and Real Deals consistently. And what do? We put our transactions on there. We show that we've done work with Smuckers. We show that we've done work with MBT, with, you know, the private equity houses, 3i, HG Capital. And that's part of it's really not one-to-one marketing. I think that was my point initially with peer-to-peer, is that we've got the CEOs and the partners from those private equity firms who we've done business with. And that influences any other particular target, because it's that collective intellectual capacity that you have. They don't have to know who you are, but if they know who else you've done business with, That's a really big deal. And if you can bring them together and introduce them, these influencers are really your referral sources, and they really help your pipeline significantly. So we've built the franchise significantly in the UK and in the continent, and a lot of it is just letting people know what you do and that you're not related to Tony Blair.
Yeah.
Suzanne,
Briefly, I would have to echo that, you know, again, also Motorola in the government public safety space, we were getting more into having to influence IT, CIOs. We typically, our relationships were with communication officers. There's a lot in the two-way radio business. Same thing, where you may not have been invited. The name may be big, but it doesn't always mean you're going to be brought to the table, because they may say, well, you're not, again, what we need. So we had to work on image and the proof points and the testimonials, and it is about the relationships and how you can connect. If you get a couple of whales, say, right, then you get them to talk to others, and then you just get that going. So, I mean, I'm not going to belabor and duplicate, but it's pretty much very similar.
Right,
and you just make yourself as big as you can from a brand standpoint, no matter how small you are. Just make yourself big.
We have three terrific CMOs, B2B marketers, three terrific change agents, and I hope it was a pleasant experience for all of you. Thank you. Mara, any final announcements? We've got anything else you want to tell this group before we stand adjourned? If you want to stay and see the Accenture ad, we'll play it, but I didn't want to hold people. Anything else? Come to our BMA luncheon.
Yes.
Okay, and thank you again.
Yeah, turn ours.
George, sign up for. And can we try one more time? Go ahead and play it. Let's try it.
At a time when it's hard to see what.